Thank you, Deanne. I'm very comforted to know that that the family into which you married, the Morgans, are very staunch. There's some of them in the room today, and they gave up nothing about what they knew about my upbringing at Marsland College. Not that there was much to divulge in the first place, but I'm glad that they remained solid. Thank you for the invitation, everyone. Can I begin by acknowledging the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation and pay my respects to their elders past and present. Really is a pleasure to talk to you today, to give you the opportunity to talk to and get to know, I hope, someone who hopes to be the Premier of New South Wales in, I think I've lost count, about 29 days' time. I am losing count. I took the leadership with 134 days to go. I've had 2 days off in the last 105. People say you must be tired. I was just asked, how do I keep the energy? By doing this, by meeting people. I love people. I feel energised when I walk into a room of people. I feel terrific. I feel like I could run through brick walls today. And I'm very much looking forward to the next month. And I'm very much looking forward to Election Day, and we'll see what happens. CEDA is a really important contributor to our national debate. You're proudly independent. You play a non-partisan role. And the role you play is of genuine value. I respect the broad engagement you cultivate across business, across government, across community organisations and academia. And what I really admire about groups like this is your members have been of great benefit to us, to me, to the opposition over the last 8 long years. And when you were in opposition, it's true that the resources of government are just not there. And so you, and I think when I was in all my shadow ministries, I had a department of one person. He's sitting over there taking photos of me now. And so the expertise that I gained in talking to all of you was just crucial. I could read reports for hours, but nothing replaced sitting down with you for 30 minutes and learning directly from you about the expertise that you hold in all of your various disciplines. So thank you for the help you've given us. One of the things I learnt as a brand new minister, Minister for Roads, back in 2008 when I presided over a $4.4 billion portfolio, of course with inflation it's much larger now, was that what you want from government and representatives as business people is fairness and certainty. Fairness and certainty. I hear that loud and clear. It's a mantra that I have lived with since that day. And I view the roles we play respectively as a partnership. It has to be a partnership. There is no other way. I've watched ministers on both sides of the political equation over the years want to throw their weight around, want to pull the levers of change hard, want to impose top-down their solutions on business and on communities without consulting. That's a recipe for a disaster. If I become your Premier, I will not lead a government like that, and I'll go into a little bit more detail about that, but I do understand that every time the course changes quickly, you stop, investment stops, uncertainty is the order of the day, and I will not lead a chaotic government. I want to lead a government that works with you, learns from you, and implements policy based on what you need and what I think is right, so that in partnership we can keep the state and nation going. Let's apply some context, though, to today. We are, of course, in an election campaign. And in government, there are many aspects of leadership, I believe, that are crucial. Belief and philosophy are vital. And those two things reflect themselves in priorities. So, too, is competence. Priorities and competence. Just keep those words in mind as I talk to you today. On both counts, I believe this government is sadly and at times tragically wanting. The result, I think, of the last 8 years is that it's been a time of squandered opportunity and therefore has been a failure to set New South Wales up for the future in the way it should have been. I think this government lacks a clear sense of civic duty and it lacks a sense of purpose. We've seen clear and mounting evidence that the priorities of this government do not line up with the majority of the people in this state, and they are alienating key demographics by the day. We've got a government now that's built on wrong priorities, the wrong allocation of resources, and as a consequence, we've seen bungled major projects, a subversion of the planning process, and a waste of billions of dollars. You do remember the Baird and Berejiklian promise from 4 years ago. If you allow us to sell your electricity assets, there'll be an explosion of productivity right across the state. That trickle-down neoliberal economics will bring an explosion of transport and roads projects. Hasn't been a ribbon cut on one of them yet in the last 8 years. And I'm not going to go back and fight that war. There will be some people in this room who will have agreed with the privatisation agenda and some who will have disagreed with it. But the reality is this. They sold a lot more than the electricity assets. In fact, they've sold $70 billion of your assets. Many of them were hugely income-producing assets. In addition to the electricity assets, there's 22,000 parcels of land, buildings, rents foregone. The Land Titles Office that holds the title deeds to your very houses, it went as well. $70 billion. So that money wasn't just once in a lifetime cash, and it wasn't just once in a generation cash. It was once in forever, a one-off, never to be seen again. And so you all know, as people who are governed by ASIC and APRA and all manner of laws, state and federal, that you hold your shareholders' money as a sacrosanct thing. David Borger told me the other day, he's doing the company director's course, the AICD course, and they put it to him this way. Consider that the money that you hold as a director and govern over is the estate of an orphan child and treat it accordingly. And there should be no difference with private monies than with public monies. So how's that gone? Well, out of the $70 billion of the proceeds of once in forever privatisation, $14 billion has been wasted. $14 billion. That's the entire proceeds of the sale of Ausgrid, that beautiful big electricity company that was snapped up readily and producing a whole raft of revenues for the government. $14 billion is gone. And this is important, and the failure can't be adequately explained. There is a way of doing things. There is a cabinet process that if you follow it according to the immutable laws that are set down for cabinets over hundreds and hundreds of years, the checks and balances and safeguards along the way prevent that from happening. And let's just have a look at one of the things that went wrong, the light rail. Started off it as a $1.6 billion project. It's now at, who knows, three and heading north. They don't know when it will be finished. They don't know how much it will cost. And they don't know when they will know the answer to those two questions. So the cabinet process is supposed to go something like this. A minister will walk in, having worked up a proposal with their department, and say, we want to do this project. They'll have done the design, some geotechs, they'll have worked up some assumptions and costed it. They'll go to Treasury and make sure the assumptions are robust and correct. They'll factor some risk in. They'll have worked up a pretty good plan. They take it to Cabinet, they get approval, and the Treasurer says, and don't come back and ask for one more cent of money. So then they go through an EIS process, publish that, ask for community consultation on it, draw on the expertise of people in this room, the engineers and people who have disciplines all along the way, who will comment on it, improve it. They bring it back to Cabinet if they need to tweak it. Hopefully they don't need to ask for more money. If they do, the Treasurer gives it to them in a hermetically sealed bundle, if you like. And then they go through the planning process, and when it's approved, they put it out for competitive tender. Your firms bid for it, drive the price down, and as partners, off you go. The light rail was like that. They didn't do the design properly. They didn't do the planning properly. They signed contracts before they knew what was under the ground. There were three initial tenderers, two big Aussie consortiums pulled out because of the risk that should have set alarm bells going. But they proceeded on, transferred all the risk to the private sector. And what do we got now? Forget about that concept of partnership I spoke to. They're litigants. the government and their partners are litigants, insulting each other in public. That is not how public money should be spent. And all because they were in a hurry. They wanted to get it done quickly. And that sacrosanct pot of money I've spoken about, wasted because it wasn't done properly. It wasn't done with due regard and proper planning. And so too with the WestConnex, where they transferred the risk to the private sector. And then when the planning approval was given on the M5, they found out that that they needed to do some more work on water mitigation in the tunnel. Transferred that to the private sector. The private sector wouldn't cop it. They're in court as well. Not sure where that's up to. You can't find out from this government what's happening with any of these things. I just want to tell you that if you treated your shareholders' money like that, there'd be a Royal Commission. And it shouldn't be different for governments. Shareholders' money is public money and it has to be treated as a sacrosanct body. This is not normal. I will not run a government like this. I will not run a government like this. This sort of behaviour leads to a lack of confidence from business, from citizens. It leads to cynicism and despair. And on those notes, as I go around Sydney now talking to people, I sense an overwhelming fatigue with the unplanned nature of activity and change. It's what I call the madness that's descended upon Sydney. The traffic chaos, the disruption caused, local councils being overridden, communities not consulted. A couple of years ago, I listened to Sir David Higgins address us in the Bradfield Oration, the architect, of course, of the HS2 project in the UK, which is a $70 billion high-speed rail project. And in the Q&A, with all his expertise, he was asked a question. What was your major learning from HS2? And he said, to take communities with you. He said, we stopped at the towns and villages all along the route and took the time to explain exactly what we were doing, showed them all the plans, we bought their confidence and brought them into it. He said, we could have completed this without doing that. It would have been identical in engineering terms, but they're proud of it now, they own it. And that was something that rang an alarm bell for me, because in this government, with this government in New South Wales today, particularly in Sydney, that's not what they do. That's not what they do. And so I've committed to these processes called a public planning inquiry. I've spoken to many, many engineers and bodies like that over the last 8 years, and they all say, we would love to have got hold of the business case or the plans for these projects and sat down and looked at them and used our expertise to have been able to say that it could have been done better. Well, I will institute public planning inquiries for major government initiatives on transport and other projects like that. And I will commandeer the local town hall with a commissioner. And whilst we're doing the development consent process, we'll have a public planning inquiry where we will take into the public as much information as we can, which is not commercial in confidence, and we'll let the people along the way and all of your members tell us how it could be improved. It's your money, you own the project, not the government. And it will not delay at all any of these projects. In fact, what delays them is haste. Haste and a lack of preparedness is what delays them, because they end up in court and communities don't buy into it. So that's what I will do for major projects in this state. And then there's the matter of priority that I spoke about. And an immutable principle, given the nature of economics, is that a government should deliver the projects that produce the greatest benefit at that time. Priorities. A matter of priority, guided by expert advice, founded on evidence, justified publicly, consulted on, tested and explained, options explored and published. But let's just have a look at what's been prioritised at the moment. The Northern Beaches Tunnel. Been in the news a little bit lately. Tony Abbott's praying for it to save his political hide. A $14 billion project that Infrastructure Australia says should be a medium term, that is 10 to 15 year project. It's not. It's on the drawing board now. There are things that need to be done before it. A stadiums policy that began before the last election at $600 million made its way to $2.7 billion, all paid for by the taxpayer. The business case didn't stack up. It was deeply unpopular. Now it too is the subject of litigation. The experts say that the Western Metro is the number one priority, transport priority for Sydney. Infrastructure New South Wales, Infrastructure Australia, and Transport for New South Wales all nominate it as the top priority. It'll connect new precincts while increasing capacity along the congested Western Corridor. It should be a foundation on which we build employment opportunities and productivity gains. The government presently puts the cost of the West Metro at about $16 billion. That's the published figure. They've allocated just $3 to its development. If elected, I've already announced that we'll set aside, and we have it available at our disposal now, thanks to a $3 billion cash injection as well from Bill Shorten, that we've got $8 billion to make this the first tier in our transport priority for Sydney. We believe this project is crucial for Sydney's future now. But let's be clear, what I'm talking about is not just about reshuffling the order of priorities. What this state needs is a government with a clear focus on delivering for people and communities. And sometimes it's not about concrete and steel. Sometimes it's about a prudent and sensible deployment of scarce resources, like trains. We have a brittle system. Heavy rain can stop the city, just as it did on New Year's Eve. And if you live on the Campbelltown line, you endure un-air-conditioned trains the government promised will be long gone by now. Long Western Sydney commuters crammed into packed carriages on the hottest of summer days. And people waiting on the platform to get home don't know or care about the 2008 infrastructure strategy. Their kids will be growing up then. They want relief now. And that's why we've committed $3 billion to a package of improvements to our Sydney and New South Wales train network to make it more efficient and reliable starting now. We'll invest in the signalling, the ageing infrastructure, and target the pinch points to deliver benefits across the rail network. There'll be no grand ribbon cutting on this project, no fancy flyers or 3D generated ads, but there will be an investment that will benefit people and communities who are crying out for a better rail service. Let's also have a look at our roads, something dear to me since I was, as Deanne says, the corporate counsel for the NRMA. The NRMA has found that since 2014-15, the infrastructure backlog on local roads has increased by almost 30%. And so that's why we've promised a $275 million increase to the Pinch Points program, bringing it to $1.1 billion for local improvements that'll have network-wide benefits. Sometimes it's not about the big tollway, it's about local roads and making your life more comfortable on a day-to-day basis. And if you think that's the case in the city, it's also the case in the bush. Regional New South Wales was promised 30% of the funding from Restart New South Wales. They're getting on average 14%. They would have got more if $14 billion hadn't been wasted. So after 8 years, they've received just over half of what they were promised. No wonder they're cranky. And I can tell you as you get out of Sydney, they are cranky. Now, the local road network makes up 80% of the New South Wales roads, but in our regions they're in a state of decline. And the NRMA found that it would cost $900 million to bring local roads in a poor or very poor condition up to a satisfactory standard. And that's why we have committed $900 million of new money to fix local roads rated poor or very poor throughout regional New South Wales. And that's not just about making life better, it's about local jobs. We'll make sure that for these projects, there's local content as well, jobs in the regions for people who live in the regions. And when you think about privatisation and the things you can do to make life better, education's top of mind. When you think about education, your mind automatically after 8 years, or mine does anyway, goes to TAFE. And this government has spent 8 years really running the TAFE system down. They've gutted the system. Whole TAFE campuses have been shut down and sold off. There are 5,700 fewer teachers and support staff in TAFE now than there were 8 years ago. Student numbers have dropped by 175,000. Fees have been going up, 22% increase across the board. So if I'm elected Premier, I'll make sure that people can get the training they need, not just young people to get into the workforce, but people of my age who find that they've lost their job and need to retrain and reskill in another industry. We will deliver at least 600,000 free TAFE courses in 10 years in areas with skills shortages, areas like construction, plumbing, electrical trades, disability care, aged care and childcare. And when we talk about education, there's always a discussion about the state of our schools. This government has allowed the maintenance backlog to increase to almost $700 million due to underinvestment in local schools. That's not acceptable. As a father of four kids, I know how important education is to every parent, and it gave me my opportunity in life, as it gave all of you yours. So what we'll do is to invest in an unprecedented school building and upgrade program. This will include $800 million for air conditioning in every school in the state, $300 million of that coming from the fact that we won't be spending $2.2 billion on stadiums. Schools and hospitals before stadiums is not a slogan, it's a promise. And when we talk about health, it's arguably the most fundamental of states' responsibilities. And the Liberal government's priorities have been to leave thousands of positions vacant in the health system. If you ask the nurses and the health services union, there are thousands of positions right across the state that haven't been filled. That's how they balance their budgets. Our priorities are different. Our priority is to cut waiting times and improve patient care by employing significantly more nurses, paramedics and hospital staff, including, the big difference, mandated nurse-to-patient ratios for the first time in New South Wales history. Our priority is to invest in public hospitals, building and upgrading in every corner of the state. And I want to say a little bit about energy today as well, and there's been a bit of commentary today about coal. Let me just say that the coal industry in New South Wales has many years of existence left in it yet. It powers our baseload power stations, and our thermal coal exports bring revenues and jobs to our state, and they're particularly crucial to areas like the Hunter Valley in terms of jobs. Now, that's not just a statement of opinion, that's a statement of fact. But it's also a statement of fact to say that it's highly unlikely indeed that anyone will invest in new coal-fired power stations in New South Wales in the foreseeable future. Not my opinion, just have a look at the present investment profiles. They're not in coal. So what we do need to do before we fall off an energy cliff is to attract investment in renewables to begin that transition now. There hasn't been that investment in the last 8 years, really, at either the state or federal level. And so we've just delivered a major policy announcement in that regard. This week we announced that a Labor government would support 500,000 households to install rooftop solar over the next decade, and that will be part of the creation of 9 gigawatts of renewable energy generation storage through reverse auctions and other methods, enough electricity to power more than 3 million homes and create an estimated 13,000 new clean energy jobs, and it'll remove in emissions terms the equivalent of 4 million cars from our roads. Industry will invest, you know, industry will invest if they're given leadership and certainty. This policy, if I'm the Premier, will deliver just that. Before I conclude, I just want to say a little bit about the state of the New South Wales budget, because I know that will be one of the key battlegrounds and one of the planks of the reinvestment re-election strategy of the government will be to paint a contrast between the state of the budget now and the state of budget when we were last in government. Firstly, you cannot claim to be grand economic managers when you blow $14 billion of $70 billion. That's the first thing. Secondly, can I just remind everybody that this government inherited a budget that was in surplus. 15 surpluses in 16 years we delivered. We dipped into deficit for 1 year and 1 year only. A quick dip during the GFC, and we brought the budget back into the black in 1 year, and this is what makes me very proud. We didn't have to sack a single mum or dad or individual that worked for the government to balance our books. This government has sacked over 30,000 people and have vacancies all across government departments, all across the state. There's a big contrast. Putting people first applies to the people who are most valuable to you, and you know it, your workers. We want to partner with and have a public sector highly trained, highly motivated and looked after, valued as our partners. If we're fighting with our own workforce, if they're intimidated by us, they won't be productive. That will not be the way of things if I become the Premier. I also inherited very low debt and solid revenues from SOCs and enterprises. I could talk for a lot longer, but time is getting away, and I know that you have a Q&A session booked in, and I value those Q&A sessions and the suggestions you make very, very highly. Can I just say thank you very much for listening to me today. I look forward to seeing you after the election, possibly some of you before, regardless of what the outcome is. I'm very proud to be here. I'm proud to be the leader of the Labor Party and talk to you over there, I suppose. Thank you very much.